If you are someone who's looking to learn more about fertility awareness method for natural birth control or conception, and you're ready to finally get to the root of hormone imbalances for good, this is the podcast for you. The cool thing is, Fertility Awareness Method is here for you in all seasons of your life. When you're looking to prevent pregnancy, when you're ready to conceive, and when you want to use it postpartum. So if you're in the phase of your life where you are looking for a natural form of birth control without all the hormones, head on over to my free training, nourishedwithnina.com/famtraining for all of the information. All right, let's go ahead and hop right into this new episode.
Right, my own personality comes into my sessions and my own personal, like my style and the way that I communicate. You know, I tend to be pretty direct and I tend to crack a lot of jokes and try to, you know what I mean, help people see things with a compassionate way. And that might not be for everyone.
Hey everyone, welcome back to a new episode of the Healing Hormones Podcast. I know you all know by now, but I'm your host, Nina Boyce, certified hormone and fertility coach and Reiki practitioner. Today, we're talking all about anxiety because anxiety is so tied to our hormonal health amongst a ton of other different factors. And you all know that I am not a stranger to struggling with anxiety. I've been very open about it on this podcast, as well as other interviews I've done. I feel like my story with anxiety always seems to come up, as it really was the catalyst for me getting into all of this work. It started with me hitting that rock bottom and realizing that my anxiety was becoming a real issue and I needed to do something about it. And that's when I learned so much about how hormones, nutrition, lifestyle, energy work, all of these things play into anxiety and beyond. And there's so much that we can do to take control of our health and our mental health. And that's why I'm really excited to have Anne Brady on the show today. Anne is a social worker and business owner with a private therapy practice here in Columbus, specializing in treating anxiety and trauma. She offers workshops on emotional wellness and has a passion for helping people reconnect to themselves and find their way to wellness. So in this podcast, we're talking a lot about my story with anxiety, how it resonates within my life, and Anne gives us some practical tips and tools for how to handle that. We just get real open and honest about anxiety and mental health, and I know that this is going to help so many of you. Having this conversation definitely reminded me that I am not alone in this. None of us are, and I cannot wait for you guys to dive in and learn so much from Anne. So without any further hesitation, let's go ahead and just hop right into this episode. Hi, Anne. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. We met because you scheduled a Reiki session with me, couple Reiki sessions with me, and found out that you're local to Columbus and all of this cool stuff. But more importantly, you are a social worker and you have your own practice here where you work with people on supporting them through anxiety. And I thought it would be a wonderful conversation for us to have, as anxiety is something I've been really open about struggling with in the past. And now that I'm pregnant, I've actually had moments where it's come back and I've had to, you know, deal with that. And so, yeah, I'm just really excited to kind of dive in and talk all things anxiety and mental health with you today. So thanks so much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and to chat all things anxiety with you.
Of course. So do you mind sharing how you got started in this field? Was it something that you've always been interested in? Is it something that you yourself have struggled with and wanted to learn more about? Or what got you started with this whole field?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think it's changed as I've gotten more insight into myself. I always have just been fascinated with people and with the growth process, watching things change and heal and grow and develop over time. I think has always fascinated me, and hearing people's stories, learning what makes them work and what makes them not work sometimes, all of that was just kind of fascinating. And it led into social work degree. I also have a big passion for social justice and those kind of causes. And so this was a beautiful blend of those two. I think in hindsight, I probably had some anxiety that I didn't really know about and know what was going on or what to call it, anything like that. So maybe a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm. When I was younger and I was struggling with, I didn't know it was anxiety. I wish I would have known then, because then I feel like I could have started the coping skills process. But instead, I just developed like I guess my own self coping strategies. But in the long run, I developed some really bad habits too. And I'm curious if you've seen that with people that have dealt with anxiety or feel these emotions and not really knowing what they were. And then you develop some bad habits around trying to cope with them sometimes, especially when we're younger, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one of the things that drives people in to therapy a lot of times, especially with things like anxiety, especially people who have kind of that high functioning anxiety, where they're often pretty driven and high achievers and get,
that's me.
Yep.
Yeah.
They usually find themselves in therapy when either the amount of energy it takes to continue all of their coping skills, all of the work that it takes just to maintain, becomes just kind of exhausting.
Uh-huh. I relate to that 100%.
When there's other consequences that come from them. Right? Like if you zone out and watch TV and that's how you cope with anxiety or something, and then you're like, gosh, I can't get anything done because all I do is lay around. Or if you're using food to cope all the time, or if you're using alcohol or any of those other kind of things to cope, that usually when those start bringing consequences is when people are like, you know what? Something's going on. I need something else.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even go to my first therapy session until I was working, like I'm not even through college. Because I remember for me, it would come in, well, what I thought was like spouts of it. Like it would be intense for a while. And again, I remember not knowing what it was. I just was like, I don't feel like myself. I'm really distracted. I can't concentrate. It was like this weird, almost like out of body experience that would happen during big transitions. That's always when it would happen, during a big transition. And I would be like, well, that other Nina's going to come back. But I still, and this was even when I was younger, like transitions from school to summer break or something big happening or whatever the case is, like all throughout my life. And then it wasn't until I had summer break, my first year, I think it was my first or second year of teaching, and it came back again. But I, like you said, I was not coping well at this point. Like my, whatever I used to do, probably avoidance or distraction, was not working. And I just was like, I can't do this anymore. Like I have to figure it out. And that was my first therapy appointment. I had to have been, I don't know, like 23. That seems wild to me that I waited that long to get, I guess, to get to that point where I was like, this needs to change.
Yeah. Well, we call it so many other things too, especially for young people. You know, we call it stress and we call it, oh, it's just a transition, or, you know, they worry too much, or they're perfectionistic, or, you know, all these other kind of cute terms that we put on it to make it, that can create some shame, right? Like, oh, I'm worrying too much. I need to just stop. It tells me to relax. Everyone tells me to de-stress and to calm down. It's just not that easy for everyone.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right. There is a lot of shame because then you compare yourself, because that's what I would do. And the thing that was always interesting for me personally was I didn't feel like I had anxiety about all the things. Like it was like just moments where it would hit really bad. And maybe there were other things I did, just like wasn't catching on to, I guess, like where my mind would just be going and going and going. But yeah, it's like I would compare and say, well, why, how come this person doesn't feel the way I do when something like this happens? Like something must be wrong with me. That was my narrative. Something must be wrong with me, which always made me feel like shit. So I don't know if you noticed that as like a common theme where people say something's wrong with me, and that's just not the case.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes people are told something's wrong with them too. But yeah, so often people come in and like, something's broken, something's wrong, I'm damaged goods, I'm not, whatever I'm doing is not good enough, you know, and that so often is an underlying belief that's under so many other things that pop up.
Can you talk a little bit more about these underlying beliefs? Because I feel like we all have them, and it's never the specific thing that we think is bothering us. It's always buried underneath there. Yeah.
So I think one of the best ways to describe this, like if we use that example of I'm not good enough, you know, or something's wrong with me as this underlying belief, what happens is that it pops up in different ways, right? So maybe it shows up like, oh, I feel insecure at work, or I'm not dating, or I have relationship problems, or, you know, I can't manage finances, whatever it is, you know what I mean? It shows up in these different areas for us. But what that turns into is kind of a whack-a-mole game. Like that's the visual, I'm a visual thinker. And so like, that's the visual that always comes to mind.
Yeah.
Like, okay, let's knock back this insecurity at work. And then it pops up over here in your relationship. And you're like, okay, let's talk about communication and knock that out. And then it pops up over here in your family relationships. And really getting to what's that underlying belief and how do we address that and heal that? You know, how do we really correct and heal that belief that, hey, I'm not good enough? Because It doesn't pop up in all of these different places.
That's such a good point, because you're right. If it keeps coming up, it seems different. It's like, oh, well, this is just work related. This is just relationship related. This is just finance related or whatever the case may be. But really, it's all tied together, because what at the core are you thinking about yourself? What is that negative self-talk that you're saying that's making everything feel so much worse?
Right. It's like the theme to it all. And if we
have
the theme, then you don't have to do as much of the exhausting coping and the exhausting whack-a-mole game.
Yeah, exactly. I heard this once and it really helped me, that the way we talk about ourselves when we're dealing with anxiety is worse, makes us feel worse than the actual anxious moment itself. It's always the way we are talking down to ourselves, comparing ourselves, saying we're not good enough. And this came up for me actually when I got pregnant. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I shared this before. I shared it a little bit. You know, the fact that your body's changing, surging hormones, a new transition, mm-hmm. old fears coming back, you know, it's a ball of a lot of things.
Yeah.
And my guilt was like, oh my goodness. Well, now I'm pregnant. I couldn't wait to be pregnant. I'm going to be a mom. I have to be a good mom. If I struggle with anxiety again, then I'm going to be a bad mom. Like this isn't going to. And so all, and then, oh no, Nina, you've worked on this for so long and you have felt really, in quotations, on top of your game for a while. Why is it all coming back now? And so this spiral, it was like boom, boom, boom. And I caught it. But I remember, I mean, it was all of the negative self-talk I was saying to myself that made it so much worse.
Yeah, that's what creates the cycle, is that shaming that we do for ourselves, right? So if you're able to go, oh, I hear that. I'm feeling anxious. I know that. And I know that if I take these three steps, that usually helps my anxiety. If you did that, then the cycle can stop. But what happens is we go, why am I doing this again? All those things that you talked about, you know, and that perpetuates it so often.
Sometimes, I'm curious to get your opinion on this. I feel like we're stubborn and our like ego gets in the way, because I will say what helped me is I made a therapy appointment and that was very helpful. And then I went back to my coping skills, which are meditation, journaling, reading books that make me feel really connected and not alone, like all of those things. And it helped me. But I also remember like, sometimes you're still doing the things, but then that negative voice is like, but maybe it's not going to work this time. How do you give advice around the fact that we are stubborn and that our egos can get into the mix sometimes?
Yeah. You know, I think I'm a firm believer that we all have like an inner toddler, right? And our first response is like, no, that's not going to work. And so just like you would talk to a toddler, right? Like, we'll try it and see, right? Just see what happens. And if not, we'll come up with a different plan. So talking to yourself, again, not getting frustrated or shaming yourself for doubting that it'll work, but just saying, you know what, even if none of my coping skills work, I already figured all of them out. And so I can figure out new ones too. Coming back to trusting yourself and being kind to yourself through that process.
Do you find that going to therapy, I'm a huge fan of it, is sometimes necessary to get to that point where you can be kind to yourself? Because I hear the story of that's just not me, or I just think I'm just not optimistic. Like I'm a pessimist, you know, and you almost feel stuck in this story that is you. So how have you found that therapy and the work that you do with your clients helps to get past that belief?
Well, I think, you know, and as someone who is well-versed in therapy, I still sometimes need my own therapist because it's so much about it is just being objective, right? It's having an objective person who's outside of your mind to help you clarify what's going on internally, right? And so that objective third person that, and you know, our loved ones can't quite be that because they aren't objective because they're invested and they're impacted by it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, absolutely. I think therapy can help with that. And I think that's something that is so important to talk about because there are so many kind of, I don't know, sayings and hashtags, and you can get, you know, like the little signs for your wall and that kind of stuff that are like, just choose happy or good vibes only, or like, you know,
I have a good vibes only sign, but yes, and if that, I know what you mean.
If that feels good to you though, that's great. If that's a great reminder of you to go like, hey, I've done the work. I know how to shift my energy. I know how to shift my emotions in the moment. This is a good reminder. And that's great. But I think a lot of people hear those sometimes and they're like, oh, well, I should be able to just turn this on and off.
Right.
And it's just not that simple, right? It takes a lot of coaching yourself. It takes a lot of healing old narratives and old stories. And that therapy can be really helpful to help you make that switch instead of just trying to kind of will yourself there.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You'll hear, oh, just go out into nature, or just think happy thoughts, or just be positive. And that I truly believe at our core, that is our nature. Like our light, our true core, we are positivity and we are, I mean, there's light and darkness, but that is the truth of who we are. But it's not that easy, especially when, you know, there's all of these other factors that get into the mix. And I would love to talk about that a little bit too, because in my world, I know one of the things that really helped me was balancing my blood sugar and working on my nutrition and doing stress reduction techniques and all of these things that physically calmed the body. But I also know that anxiety runs in my family. And so my body is a little bit wired to go that way, you know? And so it's like we are all wired differently. So for some of us, anxiety might be our go-to instinct. And so there is a little bit of that genetic piece too of like who we are. And so can you touch on some of the factors that can contribute to anxiety?
Yes. So yeah, you know, there's definitely a genetic component and a family, like a nurture component too, right? Mm-hmm. Think about it. If you are around someone who is always worried about something, you learn to do that too, right?
Yeah.
You grew up in an anxious household with other anxious people, then you're going to have some of those tendencies because that's how your brain was trained. And there's a genetic component to it, right? And a brain chemistry component to it, right? So all of those things can be factors. And then even other things, like, you know, one of the things that people don't often think about is like caffeine.
Exactly.
Caffeine can be terrible for anxiety. And there are people who can drink it all day long and are unaffected. And other...
My husband.
Yeah. And you know what? That's changed for me. Thinking about my 20s, I could have caffeine literally until I went to bed and had no problems with it.
And me too.
If I have a cup past noon, if I have a cup of coffee past noon, I'm not sleeping that night.
Yeah.
Two cups, I'm probably all jittery.
Yeah.
Right? And so you have to kind of monitor how do things like caffeine and sugar affect you. Again, some people can eat it and drink it without any problems and some people can't. And so you have to pay attention to those kind of things. And even alcohol.
Right.
It's a depressant. And so it feels calming in the moment, but how do you feel the next few days? Because
it's
your brain chemistry, you know, and it can create this imbalance and a heightened anxiety in folks for days after.
I think anxiety can sometimes feel uncontrollable. And so it almost is like, well, it's just me. It can't be any of these other things.
Mm-hmm.
But really, when you start to experiment, and you start to feel better. I mean, that really did happen with me. Was I was drinking Trenta iced coffees, like huge iced coffees all day long. And I was like working at two buildings and I was getting my master's degree and I just was doing so much and I was running on caffeine. And I think over time, my body was just like, you can't do this anymore. And that's again where the hormone imbalance and like the chemical imbalances can start to get into the mix. And all of a sudden it's like, wow, I couldn't drink coffee as much. Still, I have to be cautious with how much I drink because my body is just more sensitive to it now. But it is interesting that you can, there is something to like nutrition and caffeine and all of these things with bringing your body back to a calm state and like just giving you that baseline that you need to help support you.
Right. And that's the thing too, you know, and there's a ton of research out there and I'm not super familiar with all of it, but there's a connection between your gut and your brain chemicals.
Yes.
Right. And I don't know that anyone has pinpointed exactly what it is. But I often encourage folks that I work with, you know, to look into it, you know,
yeah.
to change up their diet and maybe they'll find something that eases for them that way too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it's so multifactorial, isn't it? Yeah. There's all of these different components. The other thing that I don't know if you know much about this or not, but the fact that we can kind of change our gene expression always makes me feel good, where it's like, that's what reminds me that if I'm more, is it predisposed, I think is the word, to having anxiety, when I'm doing certain things, it's going to manifest more for me in my body. But when I'm doing other things that seem to be supporting and balancing the body, then it's easier for me to cope. So knowing that there's things that we can kind of do to help shift those things around always makes me feel, I don't know, maybe it's a control thing, but it makes me feel like I'm a little bit more in control of it.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, that's fascinating. I don't know a ton about it, but it's absolutely fascinating to think about the ways we can modify that expression.
You know? Epigenetics. Look into it. It's super, super cool.
Yeah. Man, our bodies are cool. Yeah, but
they are
learning those things, like what supports me better?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like how am I sleeping? How am I eating? What am I drinking? Like all of those kind of things make a huge difference. So,
yeah. One thing that you mentioned and we were talking about before we started recording was like not just treating the illness, but learning about these coping skills. I feel like when we get a diagnosis, it can be helpful because then we can get treatment. But sometimes when we get a diagnosis, it also becomes who we are. Like we become that diagnosis. And that's when it can feel very claustrophobic almost. Like, well, I got this diagnosis and now this is what I have to deal with. So do you have any words of wisdom around that and somebody that might be struggling with the fact that I'm diagnosed with this and now I feel sort of stuck with it forever?
Yeah. You know, gosh, I probably have a whole diatribe in me about diagnoses.
Tell us about it.
I love it. So diagnoses are only helpful as far as they're helpful. Sometimes being able to name something feels empowering. Sometimes being able to say like, oh, this is an anxiety disorder. Now I understand what's happening. I can take some steps to, you know, to get treatment or to help cope, manage it, all that kind of stuff. But if you get too attached to it, right? I've seen that over and over again where people kind of identify themselves as an anxious person.
Exactly.
Right? Instead of like, I'm a person who sometimes feels anxiety, which is, you know, everyone. Everyone mm-hmm. has anxiety sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
An emotion. And so, yeah, it can really get to be too enmeshed with your personhood, right? Where like, I can't do that because of my anxiety, or I have to do these things because of my anxiety. It becomes like this little passenger that rides along with you, you know, and it's something that, you know, in a lot of mental health diagnoses aren't things that we would say are like curable, right? Where like, there's a time when you are totally cured and it's not coming back. It's not something we can measure, like if you have cancer.
Mm-hmm. And that also feels very trapping.
Yeah. Yeah. But it also is something just kind of like you've talked about and like I've experienced, like it ebbs and flows throughout your life.
Exactly.
Right. Like you go through a big life transition, like getting pregnant, you're probably going to feel some anxiety and you know what to do with that. And that doesn't mm-hmm. mean that it's going to color the whole experience that you have of motherhood.
Right.
Right. It means, oh, I feel anxious when I transition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so letting it just be what it is. And honestly, a lot of diagnoses and a lot of the reason for them, especially in the mental health world, is really more due to insurance.
Exactly. So when I had my first therapy appointment, back when I was like 23, he said, I am going to put this down on here. I think it was generalized anxiety disorder or something like that. And he said, this isn't to put like a blanket statement or label you. It's for insurance purposes so that we can say this is what we're treating and this is what we're doing in here. And I remember feeling really relieved with that. When I went to the doctor, though, I definitely had the opposite experience where he was like, you have generalized anxiety disorder. So, you know, here's your prescription. And I remember being like, wait, what? You don't even know me. Wait a second. Hold on. Like, why'd you just throw that out at me? But in my therapy appointment, it felt much more like, we're putting this down so that we can get the insurance covered and things like that. But let's actually talk about how to get to the root of what's going on here. And it was a completely different experience for me.
Yeah. And so often, you know, things aren't black and white, right? Things, so often folks with anxiety also struggle with some depression too. Mm-hmm. And so my therapy with you is going to be the same, whether we put depression or anxiety in the chart. We're still going to talk about what symptoms are presenting for you, you know, or if it's, maybe it's PTSD. A lot of times PTSD symptoms and anxiety symptoms are the same. And so treatment might look fairly similar.
Yeah.
Especially different parts of it. And often the diagnosis is really just insurance based. And so I think sometimes that can be empowering, right? So I think if it's something that feels empowering to name it and to know what's going on, then great. And if it's not, try to kind of let it roll off, you know? And if you're seeing someone, talking to a doctor or a therapist, talk to them about that too. Like, hey, that feels bad. What? Mm-hmm. How do we talk through this diagnosis and what it means?
Mm-hmm. But it does make sense to me if you're working with somebody that's struggling with PTSD that you're going to need to take a different approach to healing than you would somebody that's just struggling with depression or anxiety, or if there's, I mean, there's so many different things. Yeah. And the treatment is different. So having a name to it can say, these are the tools that can help you.
Yeah.
I think going back to my own personal experience, it's this idea that something is wrong with you. So it's like, if I have that labeled down, then that's what I'm stuck with. But really, it's like, that's how you're going to get the best help and the best strategies and the best tools, right, that are tailored to the struggle you're going through right now. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I think just to kind of illustrate it a little bit. So if we're looking at PTSD versus an anxiety diagnosis, right? So in order to be diagnosed with PTSD, you have to have a certain specific set of symptoms, and it also has to persist for 6 months, right? So if you come in to see me 4 months after something really traumatic happens, you technically don't have PTSD, right? Because you technically don't meet that criteria. And so it might look like an anxiety diagnosis in the chart, but we're still doing trauma work.
Yeah.
Because that's still what's happening. And so again, that's just a little technicality on it, I think. And
yeah,
if they mean something to you, that's great. And if it feels heavy, you don't have to carry it.
I love that. That makes so much sense. And just, I think for people listening, they're going to already feel a sense of relief. Like, oh, I don't have to carry that if I don't want to.
Right. Right.
So I know the things that have helped in my own life. And I always say when I'm ever talking about anxiety, it's so multifactorial. There's so many different things. And like you mentioned, I've now come to terms with the fact that anxiety will come and it will go for me. And that's okay. Because when I fought it, that was the worst of it. I remember actually saying this in a therapy appointment. I was like, well, I don't like that, Nina. I need her to be gone forever. It was like this idea that I can never not be happy, bubbly, non-anxious Nina. Like I can't be that other person. I have to always be this person. And so when I would feel it, I would fight it so much that I would make myself feel terrible.
Yeah.
And so like realizing that it can come and go was huge for me. Like it was like a relief off my shoulders. Like, oh my goodness, it's allowed to be here and that's okay. Can you talk more about that? Because sometimes I think the fight is worse than just, it can be here and I can feel this way right now and this too shall pass.
Always the fight is worse. You know,
yeah.
So many people come in with this kind of like, I want to cut this part of me out.
Yes, that was me. It was totally me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, logically, that's how we like to solve problems, right? It's like, let me get rid of this thing that I don't want or I don't like, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you get some mold on your bread or something. Let me just cut that out.
Yeah. But get rid of the old. Get it out of here.
But we are complicated and nuanced people. And we have all these different parts to us. And health comes from learning to kind of carry those parts forward, right? In a way where we're all getting along. Mm-hmm. Rather than, I hate this part and I want it to go away. Let's get rid of this one. And I'm only picking and choosing which parts in myself I'm going to accept. That fight in and of itself creates that shame cycle and creates that, you know, it perpetuates it, right? Where it goes on and on, makes the anxiety so much worse. And it's just exhausting.
So exhausting.
And if you can learn to, like you said, just name it, like, oh, this is anxiety. Sometimes he comes along with me. Sometimes, you know, they're in the backseat and I don't really notice, but they're there and I know what to do when they're here. Right. And I know what to do when it shows up and it's just a part of life. Right. So to move forward with that, with compassion towards all parts of yourself, even the anxious parts, you know, or even the depressed parts or whatever they are, but to really learn to kind of bring those forward with love and compassion towards yourself is how you really create some health.
I mean, we're human, so it's impossible for us to be perfect, but so many of us have grown up with these perfectionist tendencies. Yeah. Like, I have to be successful. I have to do this. I have to be one way. I have to look a certain way. We're so hard on ourselves that it makes sense that when there's a part of us that we don't like, well, what do we want to do? Like, there's no way we're going to embrace that. It's like, I can't embrace this part of me that I don't like. I have to block it out and push it away. But for anybody that's struggled with anxiety or depression, you know that you can't push it away. It'll just come back stronger. So it's you're right. It is such a learning of acceptance of all the parts of you, because there are good and there are bad, and that's human existence.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. We're nuanced and complicated beings. We just not as straightforward or black and white as we want it to be.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what are some of your favorite tools to teach to your clients? Like, what are your favorite tools for coping with anxiety in challenging moments?
Yeah, you know, I almost always start at just a good diaphragmatic breath, just a good belly breath, ways to kind of flip your nervous system, right? So if you are in that fight or flight mode, you're in that panic mode, just a simple breathing exercise or other grounding exercise, anything that's really engaging your senses in the moment can help you just get your feet under you, right? I think of it, it's almost kind of like, if you don't get your feet under you while you're trying to, like, you know, go down this hill, you're going to tumble the whole and you'll get to the bottom eventually. It's going to be a little battered and bruised. But if you take a second to get your feet under you and come up with a plan for how you're going to get down, it's much smoother, right? Much less bumps and bruises along the way. And so anything that will give you that moment, right? Just like one little moment of mindfulness, one little moment of pause to get your feet under you, it gives you a second to plan your next steps.
Yeah.
So doing that at kind of a base level, especially if there's some panic involved, right? Is to just, before you can do anything else, you got to slow your body a little, right? You got to access that parasympathetic nervous system. And then also things like, are you getting some movement in? Movement is great for anxiety. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be like a complicated or extensive workout program, right? It doesn't even have to be a big yoga fan. It doesn't have to be a whole yoga class or anything. Like, can you do a few poses? Can you put on a song and have a dance party, right? It's what, 3 minutes? You got 3 minutes,
right? Connecting to your body is huge, because I feel like when you're experiencing anxiety or even depression, you're either ahead of yourself or you're behind yourself.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you got to put yourself back in the present. And that's personally one of my favorite ways too, is connecting with my body. So doing yoga for me is a big one as well. Is like, and it doesn't, you're right, it doesn't have to be a full class, but it helps me get out of my mind, because then I'm focusing on the posture. I'm focusing on how my hip feels, or, you know, what my arms are feeling like in that downward dog. And then I obviously then connect to the breath, and I all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is me in the present. And I'm retraining, I guess, retraining my body to remember, oh, this is what it feels like when I'm here in my body in the present moment.
Yeah. Yeah. You nailed it. I can't tell you how many times a day I say that about mm-hmm. almost exactly what you just said about anxiety being either in the past or the future.
Yeah.
Right. And if you drop into your body's always there you are. In the moment. Yeah.
Always. Yeah. There's one constant thing that's always in the present, and that's the body.
Yeah. And often, you know, sometimes people come in and they don't even necessarily have like thought or cognitive symptoms, right? Sometimes anxiety looks like a lot of worry or I can't stop thinking about something. And sometimes it looks like just physical symptoms.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I was talking to one of my really close friends and she was saying that. She's like, you know what, Nina, it's not the worrisome thoughts. She's like, it's just in my body. I feel this. And I felt that too, but I feel like mine starts with the thoughts and then it goes into my body. Yeah. And it was the first time I heard someone say, I'm not having these thoughts. It's purely a reaction within my body.
Yes. And that's where I think, you know, often therapy can fall short if you're just doing talk therapy. Because so when people like your friend present, right, if it's all in your body, then working on changing your thoughts around and worrying less is not going to be as effective because you don't
right.
necessarily have that conscious awareness of what you're worrying about. And so learning to move it kind of through your body can be really helpful.
Is it? So when that happens, is it truly that it's so subconscious? The mind might not even know what it's worried about. It doesn't feel it at all, but the body remembers and it just, or how does that manifest? Like, yeah. Is it literally a physiological response where, I mean, I know I'm afraid or was, I guess I still am, of elevators. And so like sometimes I would get right in and my body immediately would be like, I got to get out of here. Like it was this crazy reaction in the body where I guess I would have thoughts after, but what, like the body remembers things and sometimes it's just like, boom, triggered.
Yeah. Yeah. So we create these neural pathways, right? Especially when there's something, you know, like a trauma that happened or if there's something like a phobia, like you're talking about a fear of elevators, right?
Yeah.
So I would bet that even if you looked at pictures of elevators, you would feel a little something.
Or watching them on TV, if somebody's in them, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, because your brain has this neural pathway. It's kind of like a rut, like the easiest path for the nerves to fire on that goes right from elevator to danger.
Yes.
And that system in us is meant to react quickly, right? Because it was developed over time and it's evolved from like when there were always lions chasing us or bears chasing us. And you don't have time to stop and think, I wonder what the bear's doing. I wonder if I'm in danger. No, you have to be like bear, run.
Right. Stop.
I guess I don't know exactly what to do if there's a bear.
Play dead. Bear, play dead. That's what I feel like you're supposed to do, but I don't know either.
Yeah. But it's right to that fight or flight, right? Fight, flight, or freeze. And so it's an instant reaction. And that's why
right. You
don't even have to think about the elevator or what floor you're on because your brain is treating it just like that lion or that bear.
Mm-hmm.
Danger. You know,
boom.
Right. And your body prepares to flee or to fight. That's where that anxiety is coming from, is that your heart's pumping faster and your breath is shallower so that you can run and you can
flee. Yeah. And it's literally like, get me out of here. Like run, get out of here. This is danger. What about when you don't know what it is though? And that's the problem. It's like, I think that comes along a lot with like panic disorder, right? Where sometimes it's like, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden here I am.
Yeah. So that, that can be a lot of different things. There can be some things that are a little bit more, you know, not on the front of your mind, right? Our mind is so good at coping with things,
mm-hmm.
good at protecting us from things and kind of shoving things to the side and underneath so that we're not thinking about them all day long. And so sometimes to connect with what the fear is and process that and, you know, understand what that's about can be helpful. And sometimes it can really be something like, you know, certainly anytime I would have somebody come in saying that they have, you know, that kind of anxiety in their body, but no worried thoughts that are going with it. And there's no trigger or stressor or problem. I would encourage them to see a doctor, right? Because it can be things like, you know, your hormones are out of
whack, right.
Or you're just purely brain chemistry and it's just not a process. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes it's a really simple fix.
Yeah.
Or sometimes there's an underlying condition, but if it's in the body, you got to work with the body.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah.
If it's in the body, you got to work with the body. I know some, as far as the elevator thing goes, mm-hmm. I now live on the sixth floor of my apartment and I have to go in an elevator every day. And I remember specifically, like, well, actually it goes back further than that. When I quit my job, I was traveling a lot with my husband for our podcast company, media company, and we would have to stay in hotels. And I wasn't, at first I would choose, like I would request floors that I didn't have to go in elevators. That's how bad I was mm-hmm. with this. And then like after a while, I remember like one of the clients put us up in this really awesome, like, suite, and it was on like the 23rd floor. And I was like, I have to stay in this. And so I was going back and forth. And after a while, I was like, if I don't go in these elevators, I'm literally going to be missing out on opportunities in my life. And it was like exposure. And then we decided to move here. And I was like, I think maybe I can do it. I still get moments where if the elevator makes a weird noise or like something, if too many people get in, I have to like get out. But, can you talk a little bit about exposure therapy when it comes to anxiety or trauma or things like that and how it helps? Because I know as far as the elevator goes, it did help me.
Yeah. Certainly with a phobia like that, you know, yeah. that phobia of elevators and that exposure therapy can often be helpful. And, you know, usually you start, I haven't done a ton of this. I'm certainly no expert in exposure therapy, but you know, you start off really small with like, let's talk a little bit about elevators and then let's look at some
yeah.
pictures and then watch a movie with it and then go look at the one.
Yes.
You step in and get out, mm-hmm. step in and go down one floor. Right. And so it builds up this tolerance. Right. And I think that goes for a lot of other things too, right. Is that there are so many things that feel overwhelming and terrifying until you do them. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, actually that wasn't so bad.
Right? Exactly.
Like setting boundaries. That's one where I tell people over and over again, like, you just have to do it. It's going to feel terrifying and overwhelming until you do it a few times and you realize that everyone survives.
Right.
Right. Like you set a boundary and things are okay and maybe even better. And then once you do it a few times, you get a little bit braver with it and bolder with it and more confident with it.
Mm-hmm.
There's huge, huge benefits to exposure, you know, in small doses.
Yeah.
It's not for everyone. There are certainly people, you know, I ask people all the time, are you like a wade in the baby pool person or are you a jump in the deep end? Like, are
yeah.
we in toes here or are we going all in? Because different people function in different ways.
Right. Yeah. I definitely think I need baby steps because jumping all in feels super scary sometimes. Like,
yeah.
Whew, yeah, jumping all in is like, okay, well, here we go. And then you feel super out of control. When you take baby steps, it's like, okay, I can do a little bit at a time.
Right.
But yeah, that actually makes me think of anxiety in itself too, is like the more I would experience a period of it and then I would come out of it and I'd be like, oh, I'm okay. Like, oh, sweet. Like I can experience this for a couple days, maybe a week or whatever I'm worried about at the time. And then I can come out of it and then I feel fine. Makes me feel like I can do this. Like if it comes again, it won't last forever. I think that was huge for me, was like this fear that it would last forever or something.
Yeah.
And knowing that it wouldn't, I could then remind myself and my body remembers too. It's like, oh wait, we've been here, but then it went away.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we know things like that from other parts of life, right? Think about things as you were transitioning to adulthood, right? Like the thought of having to go to the grocery store for the first time by yourself probably felt overwhelming. Like I have to plan for a whole week and get everything at once. And now you do it all the time.
Right.
And so sometimes to think about less intimidating things, because anxiety can feel big and intimidating, right? So to think about like some unrelated, less emotionally tied things, like that,
mm-hmm.
like cleaning, right? Think about being 20 and cleaning your apartment. It was like, whew, that's a big task. Like, I don't have time for all that. It's too exhausting. And then you get in, you know, to be older and more of an adult and you're like, oh, well, that is just part of life. Like it's not,
yeah.
I can just knock it out real quick.
Yeah. Sometimes it still feels a little bit overwhelming, but only sometimes. I feel like I'm thinking of my kitchen right now. I was like, oh yeah, I gotta like go clean my kitchen right now. But I can handle it. We've been here before.
Yeah.
This too shall pass.
Through it before, right?
Yeah, this will be fine.
Yeah.
You know, the getting into your body, the deep breathing, I know you have workshops on this too, so we can definitely chat about that. But for anybody that is currently struggling, what would be your biggest piece of advice for them where they feel like, I've been trying to do these self-coping mechanisms and I just don't feel like they're working right now? Like, where's my next step? Where do I turn?
Yeah, you know, I think therapy would be super helpful. Like, if you have tried a little bit on your own, or even if you haven't, and you're just done and ready for something different, check out therapy. It really, it sounds so big, right? And it sounds so scary. And it is often scary the first time and very overwhelming, right? But if you just try it out and talk to someone, I think so many people find it helpful and so many people find it beneficial. And you also don't have to be in it forever.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something that you know, a lot of times people worry that they can, like, well, if I go to therapy and I have this anxiety disorder that's going to be there forever, I just have to be in therapy forever. That's not true either.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was struggling the most, I would go the most. And like recently, besides, like, I did a therapy appointment during my first trimester and then one when I entered my second trimester. But before that, it was like many months in between, actually, where I would almost go as like a checkup. I felt like, oh, I see that I haven't been in a while, like many months.
Yeah.
And I see some old habits coming back.
Yeah.
And that's when I would schedule. It was almost like maintenance before I get stuck in an old pattern. Like, let me talk through this old pattern with somebody that knows me and is like that outside voice that can help bring me back to remembering that I don't need to go and get stuck in these old habits again. Because that is it for me too, is like sometimes if I wait too long, I don't realize that I'm getting stuck in a bad habit again.
Yeah. Yeah. We are creatures of habit, right?
Right.
And just go along with things for a really long time if we don't stop and assess.
Yeah.
Actually feeling, how am I actually doing? Is this how I want things to be? Right. And so having, and you know, so often, so many employers, especially large corporations and that, have EAP resources for people where you can get a handful of free sessions every year. Why not? Why leave that on the
table? Yeah.
Right. It's already taken care of and paid for. It's low commitment, right? Because it's just, you know, often they're not like, oh, we'll pay for, you know, a whole year of therapy for you. But it's like, we'll give you 5 sessions.
Mm-hmm.
8 sessions or something. And so just to go in and check in with yourself and check in with, kind of like you said, that external person, right?
Yeah.
Objective third party can be really beneficial. And they, you know, it's really helpful to just sometimes go and say, hey, I just need some help with anxiety. Like, you don't even have to go into everything. If you are not ready for it, if there's some stuff that you're not ready to touch, but you're like, I need a little help with anxiety, you might be able to get some skills to help you with that until you are ready to take a deeper dive. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think it opens up your awareness too, to things you might not have realized, like, oh, that makes sense. And then it's a sense of relief again. And I feel like it really does come back to awareness too. It's like awareness of, oh, this is what I'm experiencing and this might be why.
Yeah.
And here's something I can do. Or in my case, like being aware of, oh, this is what you used to do that might not be as healthy. Okay, well, let's go back to some things that we've already learned. And therapy helps you open up your awareness because it's hard to do that when you're just stuck in your own mind.
Yeah. And to have an objective perspective.
Yeah.
So helpful. It's so.
Yes.
Because you just can't see everything.
And it can't always be family and friends like you mentioned too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like they can be helpful for sure. Like, I don't want to underestimate like talking to family and friends about things. Like, they are incredible support. But I know with my mom, for example, she used to deal with a lot of her own stuff. And so like, I feel like, oh, well, I don't want to burden her, or, you know, there's just like, it's easier to talk to sometimes somebody that is unrelated to you in any way.
Right. And I think it's just so much easier sometimes to share with someone who's a little bit anonymous and a little bit
exactly
from your life.
Yes.
Because it's not like you know, if you pour your heart out to a partner or something, you also then have to like have dinner with them and share a bed and, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those other kind of things. And sometimes it's nice to be able to leave it all in someone else's office.
Yeah. And then you can sometimes feel shame when you shouldn't be feeling shame, because then you say, are they judging me? Are they thinking about this? Oh, I told them that. Now are they just thinking I'm like this all the time? It's like you create these shame cycles around it. Whereas when it's somebody like a therapist, it's just like, you're right. You leave it in their office. And also, if they're a good therapist, you don't feel judged ever. It's right. Like,
right.
This is a safe space to share whatever you want to say and go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it should be something that feels pretty like good to you. So it doesn't always feel good, right? There's sometimes you're digging up deep emotions and it's hard to take a look at yourself, but you should feel supported and you should feel heard and understood. And you know what I mean? Like that person gets you. And if not, mm-hmm. if you've given it a few sessions and you're not feeling that, then maybe they're just not the right person for you. And
yeah,
you know, and again, a good therapist will help you then find the right person if it's not them.
That's a good point to make too, that you shouldn't have to feel stuck in any way. And
yeah.
If it's not working with one person, it's not you. It's just maybe that there's a better fit out there.
Right. You know, and therapists, we're people too, right? My own personality comes into my sessions and my own mm-hmm. Personal, like my style and the way that I communicate. You know, I tend to be pretty direct and I tend to crack a lot of jokes and try to, you know what I mean, help people see things with a compassionate light. And that might not be for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Where do we find resources? So I know you can get referrals or there's websites. I mean, I'll obviously link to your information in the show notes for anyone, Columbus, or do you do virtual like everywhere, or how does that work? Where do people find resources if they're looking for therapy?
Yeah. So I'm in Columbus and I'm doing virtual now because of COVID-19, but you still have to reside in Ohio to work with
me, right?
Because of licensure. And most states are that way. There's a little bit of leeway for some states, but most states you have to find someone in your own. And so I would recommend, you can always talk to your doctor or your insurance company and they should be able to give you a list and a doctor should be able to make a referral. Honestly, Psychology Today is a good.
Yeah, it is. I've found good resources there before.
Yeah. And so it's a, like a directory of therapists, right? And most people who in private practice, like I am, have a profile and you can see their picture and a little, you know, bio of them and a little list of their specialties and those kind of things. And so it's helpful to be able to look at, you know, where is their office and what vibe do I get when I look at the page and all of those kind of things. Right. So that's a really helpful resource. Therapy Den is another similar one. I don't know that it's quite as extensive. I think that one's a little bit newer, but it's the same concept. You know.
Nice. The resources are out there. I also wanted to ask you, why do you think there is a stigma still? I actually want to say I think it's way better. I think like for my parents, for example, they've never done therapy and I do feel like it could have been really helpful for them in very different instances. But why do you think there is a stigma sometimes? And do you also see it getting better? Because I do.
Yes, I do see it getting better. And certainly, you know, kind of like we talked about at the beginning, some people wear it like a badge of honor, where it's normal.
Oh, yeah.
To be like, yeah, I have a therapist, almost kind of be able to have like a therapist on retainer.
You know, yeah.
Every so often. And that,
I hear like that's New York City where people are like, oh, yeah, I got my therapist.
Right. Yeah. I'm thinking of like very cosmopolitan of women and that. But
yes.
Yeah. So I think it is getting better because I think resources are more accessible, right? So it wasn't even that long ago that there was mental health parity in our insurance coverage where
you
have to have similar benefits for mental health conditions and diagnoses that you do for a medical diagnosis or a physical health diagnosis. So I think some things like that, and I think just people sharing about it,
mm-hmm.
and people talking about, because we have these images of what, you know, depression looks like, and we have these images of what anxiety looks like. Right. And I think the more that people can say, hey, you know, I've had anxiety too. And look, I'm also living a really normal life.
Exactly.
Person, like you're just a person.
Yeah.
And I just have had these things that I needed a little support for. It can feel much more normal. I think that's why it's getting a little bit better.
Why? People are open and sharing, which is what we've always needed. Exactly. When I think of sometimes the older generation, and if anybody's listening to this that is older, I'm sorry. I think this could be a bias, but I do feel like it's private. Like this is private. This is my struggle. And I'm going to keep it together because I'm strong enough to keep it together. It's just things that I've maybe observed and witnessed. As opposed to now, I see a lot of people saying, this is my struggle and I'm going to share it because this doesn't define me. And also maybe it'll help you. And then people feel less alone. And then all of a sudden, a lot of us are getting the help we need because it's normalized.
Yeah. And I think the stigma is not quite gone because because vulnerability is hard and scary.
Yes.
Right. And so it's much easier to think like, oh, those are other people who struggle with that. Not me. I'm just going to keep it to myself. And I think, you know, it depends. There are cultures, right, where you just don't talk about emotions, right? You don't talk about this kind of grin and bear it, right? And that can range from culture in terms of where you live or ethnicity and even just your family culture, right? There are some family cultures who just say like, no, we don't talk about things.
Italians like to keep things like buttoned up, you know? that's something I think that is kind of Italian culture too, where it's like, we are emotional people, but at the same time, it's like, we got this. Like, we don't need to chat about these things.
Yeah. Or even just a culture of we keep things in the family.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like, yes. The things. All of those contribute to making it more difficult and more shameful sometimes for people to access therapy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm so glad that we're having these conversations, and I'm very open about the things that I've gone through, and I'll say it again. It's been many different things for me. Therapy's been a huge one. I will always have it in my back pocket. I will always have a therapist. Food has been a big one for me. Caffeine, like you mentioned, learning about the body, and then energy work. You know, I'm a Reiki practitioner. So doing things like Reiki and acupuncture and getting into my more spiritual side, whatever that is for you, like that has been a huge thing for me too, because it allows me to get outside of myself and realize that there's something bigger here at play. And so it's like adding all of these things together is like I have a little toolbox of things that I can always go to that have been helpful for me. So I'm glad that therapy is one of them.
Yeah. And that's, you know, all those things are so beautiful and they might not feel good to other people. Like for you might not be someone else's jam.
Yeah.
And so you really got to connect into yourself and figure out what helps you feel good.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Because somebody might be like, Reiki, no way. That is not going to be great for me. And then they have something completely different. And we all jive with different techniques and different modalities.
Right. And you have to really give yourself that compassion, because I'm telling you, if you don't think Reiki is going to be good for you, and then you go and you sit through a Reiki experience, you're going to be distressed the whole time and it is not going to be helpful to you.
Yes, exactly.
Right? It's not going to feel good if you're willing it not to. And so rather than trying to kind of square peg round hole yourself into, you know, this thing that's supposed to be good for you, even like yoga, like there's so many even studies on how.
Or meditation too. Like people, yeah, it's like.
Yeah. But you know, and I don't love sitting meditation. It's not great for me. It's not something that I love to do.
Yeah.
And so I find other ways to work mindfulness into my day that works much better for me. And so we try to work with people on like, what's actually working for you? Because just because the study says that yoga and meditation are helpful with anxiety doesn't mean forcing yourself to do them daily is going to be better.
And too, when you're forcing yourself, that I think that then can enforce like something's wrong with me, because it's like, well, this study says I need to do yoga and I need to meditate, but they're not working. So I'm just broken. Like it can reinforce that, as opposed to saying like, well, maybe meditation and yoga just aren't your jam, and that there's another route that's going to make you feel a whole lot better than doing that.
Yeah.
Although I'm always going to advocate for those things because I love them too. But it's like that doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah. Me too. And that's where I start, honestly, with most people is, have you tried these?
Yeah.
Let's talk about how to incorporate them. But for some people, they really don't like it. And then it's more distress. And so we've got to.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, can you chat with us a little bit about some of these resources that you have coming up? And then, of course, we'll link to all of it in the show notes so listeners can go back and, you know, of course, if they're in Ohio, can get the help that they need as well. But I know you have some workshops and things coming up too.
I do, yeah. So I actually have a series of workshops starting this fall that will be, they're geared towards reframing how we talk about self-care. Because I think that word has become a little bit cliche.
Yes, it has.
I think it's become a little bit about like face masks and bubble baths and stuff.
Yeah.
And that's just not great for everyone for a whole multitude of reasons. And so I have these workshops launching. One of them is, the first one is an overview that really helps you reframe self-care from a to-do list item into kind of a mindset in a way that you move through the world. Because honestly, who's got extra time and extra money to spend on better labeled self-care when really...
And I was just gonna say, I love that it's like, okay, check, I've done this, check, I've done this, check, I've done this. That just feels like another task. And so many of us do feel like in order to be okay, I have to wake up and journal for 20 minutes and then I have to meditate and then I need to light my candle and then I need to take my magnesium bath and then I have to do this and this. And it's like, what? Like, I can't possibly keep up with all of these things.
I know. And I think about like the morning routine. That's the perfect example. I talk about that in the workshop all the time too.
Yeah.
But you're also supposed to wake up and have a cup of warm lemon water, and you're supposed to have a green tea, and you're supposed to have a smoothie. And it's like, that's a lot of items to drink before I go to work. But I can't hold all of that.
Right.
And so, yeah, you know, I think really paring it down to what works for you is so essential.
Exactly.
So in that workshop, I talk about the three components of wellness, which I talk about to be self-connection, dropping into yourself, you know, and being able to do that assessment, setting healthy boundaries in your relationships, and then shifting the way that you talk to yourself. And then the other workshops are a deeper dive into each of those, right? So if you, we do kind of an overview in the first one, if you just need to kind of get you going. But if you're like, ooh, boundaries are tough for me, I've been working on that, then that boundary workshop might be really helpful for you. Because we'll do
boundaries are hard, especially for people pleasers.
So hard.
Yeah.
People pleasers are the worst of those. Yeah. And so they're interactive, they're virtual because of COVID. Hopefully sometime next year we'll be able to run them in person, but I keep them interactive. No one wants to hear me talk at them for a couple hours. They're interactive. You'll walk away with really concrete ways to take care of yourself.
That's amazing. Those sound so helpful and so needed, especially during this like wild time. We all need a little bit of knowledge to bring us back to ourselves and to help us, like you said, create these boundaries and learn to connect to self again. It's like, I feel like in the times that we're in right now, we need it more than ever.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your wisdom with us. I cannot wait to link all of this information for people. Is there anything else you want to leave us off with or send us off with that might be a helpful tool for anyone right now learning to cope with their own mental health?
Yeah. You know, self-compassion is number one. The more that you can be kind and understanding towards yourself, and make that your top priority, you're going to get farther with self-compassion every single time than you will some critiquing or shaming of yourself. So if there's one thing that you can shift doing today, one thing you can do is to just be a little kinder to yourself.
It helps. It works. Yeah. I'm telling you. Yeah. Like learning to give myself that self-compassion and cut the judgment before it spiraled too far has been a game changer for me. So I love that piece of advice. Awesome. Well, thank you again so much. And I cannot wait for this episode to get into everybody's ears.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It was great chatting with you.
I hope you all enjoyed that episode with Ann Brady. If you are interested, the links to her workshops are going to be in the show notes. Check them out. Do not hesitate to schedule a therapy session if you feel like you are needing it. We've also linked to some other resources if you are not located in Ohio, or even if you are, where you can find a therapist that is the right fit for you. Your mental health is so important, and I know that therapy has been a huge help in my own life, amongst all of the other strategies and tools that I implement in my own life. And if you ever need somebody to talk to or to help guide you and help find you resources, don't hesitate to reach out to me. I'm here to support you in any way that I can. All right, everyone, thanks so much for listening to this episode, and I cannot wait to talk to you all next Monday with a new episode.